The shuttle cycled through the lock of his flagship, Kriegsfire. The giant doors, comfortingly massive and enduring, swung shut behind them. The shuttle pilot plotted a course to the Tandu flagship. Tandu. Ewalt flexed his ridge crest as a display of confidence. He would lose heat from the sale of nerves and blood vessels in the frigid atmosphere of the Tandu ship, but it was absolutely necessary to maintain appearances. It might have been slightly less distasteful to make an alliance with the Soro instead. At least the Soro were more Thenanoid than the anthropod Tandu, and lived at a decent temperature. Also, the Soro's clients were interesting folk, the sort Buol's people might have liked to uplift themselves. Better for them if we had, he thought, for we are kind patrons. If the leathern Soro were meddlesome and callous, the spindly Tandu were horrifying beings. Their clients were weird creatures that set off twitches at the base of Buolt's tail when he thought of them. Buolt grimaced in disgust. Politics made for strange gene transfers. The Soro were now strongest among the survivors. The Thenanin were weakest of the major powers. Although the Tandu philosophy was the most repulsive of those in opposition to the Abdicator Creed, they were now all that stood in the way of a Soro triumph. The Thenanin must ally with them for now. Should the Tandu seem about to prevail, there would be another chance to switch sides. It had happened a number of times already, and would happen again. Buolt steeled himself for the meeting ahead. He was determined not to let show any of his dread of stepping aboard a Tandu ship. The Tandu didn't seem to care what chances they took with their crazy, poorly understood probability drive. The insane reality manipulations of their Apesiarch clients let them move about more quickly than their opponents. But sometimes the resulting alterations of space-time swallowed whole groups of ships, impartially snatching the Tandu and their enemies from the universe forever. It was madness. Just let them not use their perverted drives while I am aboard, Buolt's organ of prayer subvocalized. Let us make our battle plans and be done. The Tandu ships came into sight, crazy, stilt-like structures that disdained armor for wild speed and power. Of course, even these unusual shapes were mere variations of ancient library designs. The Tandu were daring, but they did not add to their crimes the gaucherie of originality. Earthlings were in many ways more unconventional than the Tandu. Their sloppy gimmickry was a vulgar habit that came from a poor upbringing. Buolt wondered what the dolphins were doing right now. Pity the poor creatures if the Tandu or Soro got hold of them. Even these primitive sea mammals, clients of a coarse and hairy wolfling race, deserved to be protected, if possible. Of course, there were priorities. Pitiable or not, they mustn't be allowed to hoard the data they held. It must be shared with the Abdicator faction, or with no one. Buolt noticed that his finger claws had unsheathed in his agitation. He pulled them back and cultivated serenity as the shuttle drew near the Tandu squadron. Buolt's musing was split by a sudden chill that made his crest tremble. A disturbance on a psi band. Operator, he snapped. Contact the flagship. See if they verify that call.
Immediately, General Protector.
Buolt controlled his excitement. The psychic energies, he felt, could be a ruse. Still, they felt right. They bore the image of the Krondos fire, which none of them had hoped to see again. Determination filled him. In the negotiations ahead, he would ask one more favor. The Tandu must provide one added cooperation in exchange for the help of the Thenanin.
Confirm, sir! It is battleship Krondos fire, the pilot said, his voice raspy with emotion. Buolt's crest stood erect in acknowledgement. He stared ahead at the looming metal mantis shapes, steeling himself for the confrontation, the negotiations, and the waiting.
Bay Chuhuan was listening to whale songs, rare and expensive copies which had cost her a month's pay some time ago, when her detectors picked up the beacon. Reluctantly, she put down her headphones and noted the direction and intensity. There were so many signals, bombs and blasts and traps. Then one of the little Wazoon pointed out to her that this particular beacon emanated from the water world itself. Bay groomed her whiskers and considered.
"I believe this will change things, my pretty little ones. Shall we leave this belt of unborn rubble in space and move toward the action? Is it time to let the Earthlings know that someone is out here who is a friend?"
The Wazoon chittered back that policy was her business. According to Union rules, they were spies, not strategists. They approved of their sarcasm. It was very tasty.
"Very well," she said. "Let us try to move closer."
Hikahi hurriedly queried the skiff's battle computer.
"It's a psi weapon of some sort," she announced via hydrophone to the crew working in the alien wreck.
Her Anglic was calm and precise, accentuated with the cool overtones of Kanik.
"I detect no other signs of attack, so I believe we're feeling a fringe of the space battle. We felt others before, if not this intense. We're deep underwater, partly shielded from psi waves. Grit your teeth, Streakers. Try to ignore it. Go about your duties in tropic clear logic."
He switched off the speakers. Hikahi knew Tisht was even now moving among the workers out there, joking and keeping morale high. The psi noise was like a nagging itch, but an itch with a weird rhythm. It pulsed as if in some code she couldn't quite get her jaws around. He looked at Hannes Tuessi, who sat on a wall rail nearby, looking very tired. He had been about to turn in for a few hours' sleep, but the psionic assault apparently affected him worse than it did the dolphins. He had compared it to fingernails scratching on a blackboard.
"I can think of two possibilities, Hikahi. One would be very good news, the other's about as bad as could be."
She nodded her sleek head.
"We've repeatedly rechecked our circuits, sent three couriers back with messages, and yet there's only silence from the ship. I must assume the worst."
"That Streaker's been taken." Duessi closed his eyes.
"Yes. This psi havoc comes from somewhere on the surface of the planet. The Galactics may even now be fighting over her, or what's left of her."
Hikahi decided.
"I'm returning to Streaker in this boat. I'll delay until you've sealed quarters for the work crew inside the hulk. You need power from the skiff to recharge the Thenanin accumulators."
Duessi nodded. Hikahi was clearly anxious to depart as soon as possible.
"I'll go outside and help, then."
"You just got off duty. I cannot permit it."
Duessi shook his head.
"Look, Hikahi, when we've got that refuge inside the battleship set up, we can pump in filtered fizzy water for the Fen, and they'll be able to rest properly. The wreck is well shielded from this psychic screeching, too, and most important, I'll have a room of my own, one that's dry, without a crowd of squeaking, practical joking children goosing me from behind whenever I turn the other way."
His eyes were gently ironic. Hikahi's jaw made a gentle curve.
"Wait a minute, then, maker of wonderful toys. I'll come out and join you. Work will distract us from the scratching of E.T. fingernails."
The Soro, Krat, felt no grating tremors. Her ship was girded against psychic annoyances. She first learned of the disturbance from her staff. She took the data scroll from the Pila Culibera with mild interest. They had detected many such signals in the course of the battle, but none yet had emanated from the planet. Only a few skirmishes had taken the war down to Kithrop itself. Normally, she would have simply ordered a homing torpedo dispatched and forgotten the matter. The expected Tandu-Thenanin alliance against the Soro was forming up near the gas giant world